Good afternoon, everyone. Pleasure to have the opportunity to talk with you today. We're going to look at the international markets that absorb so much of the cotton produced in the United States these days. And while I'm having the opportunity to present this, I want to recognize Vicki Martin, as well as Mr. Hongzhi Li in our audience today. They're the folks that go out and gather a lot of this information that we're able to put together and form some of the impressions that may help us gain a better understanding of this very complex market that we're working in today. There is no such thing today as business as usual, and that the changes not only are occurring, but they seem to be accelerating in this business. We, regardless of whether you are a producer, a ginner, someone that supplies auxiliaries, a spinner, a weaver, a dyer, a finisher, we are all dependent upon a very complex global supply chain. Now, dependent is a nice way of saying that we are at the mercy of that global supply chain. And that global supply chain is just like nature. It can be quite vicious. There have been absolutely massive changes in the U.S. textile industry, who was the previous best customer of the cotton industry in this country. Those changes have occurred over the past 15 years, and they have really accelerated during the past 5 years, and these are not good changes. These changes have resulted in the shuttering of a significant portion of the U.S. industry. But we aren't alone in this. It's not something that's unique to the United States. These same kinds of massive changes have occurred in textile industries throughout the developed world. 20 years ago, when I did international travel, we were targeting places like Germany and Portugal and France, and to a lesser degree, the United Kingdom. We went to Japan, we went to Taiwan, we went to Korea. They are all in the same boat to varying degrees. They have gone through the same kinds of contraction in their textile industries. And the textile industries have moved toward the lower labor cost countries of the world, some of which will be named later in this talk. This has also trickled down to the whole textile and apparel supply chain. In fact, the apparel supply chain may be the cause of a lot of this. And those changes impact everyone. Even if you're in a low labor cost country, even if you're very price competitive, you're still having to deal with these changes in the apparel supply chain. Way back, a long time ago, early in my career, I worked in a textile mill. We had product designers, quite often located in New York, that came up with these wonderful styling ideas. They sent them down to us. We worked from a manufacturing viewpoint to determine if we could manufacture that product. If you could, you put it into production. Salespeople went out and sold it, and that's what went out into the market. Today, product development is exactly upside down from that. Retailers and large, typically Asian-located sourcing companies figure out what it is that the consumer wants. They develop product ideas. They send those ideas to the mill. They tell them what to make, when to make it, and most importantly, they tell the mill how much they're willing to pay for it. Mills, the spinners, have moved from being price makers to being in the same boat as many cotton producers or ginners and being price takers. 1997 was a high point in domestic cotton sales in this country. The U.S. textile industry absorbed 11.3 million bales of cotton, and we shipped 7.5 million bales outside of this country. 2008 is a very different picture. Over 13 million bales exported and only slightly over 3.5 million bales consumed domestically. And if you think this is temporary, I think you are engaged in denial. This is probably the way things will be for a long time to come. In fact, if you look at this, just one country, China, uses more U.S. cotton than the U.S. mills. So, guess who your customer is today? Now, I wonder sometimes how much of this industry, in terms of producers and ginners, are aware of this huge change that has occurred in the markets into which their product goes and into which they sell. Our best customers in 2008 were China, followed by a still somewhat important market here in the U.S., Turkey, Mexico, Indonesia, and Vietnam. Here's a photograph that we took recently in China. Let's see if I can make this mouse work. Look at this lady standing at attention here. This is Madam Shang. Her company uses 4 million bales of cotton a year. Do not make this lady mad. If we go with the normal idea that China uses about 25% U.S. cotton, that could easily make or break this industry. That's a million bale swing, potentially, just from this one mill in China. And you're going to encounter, if you go out and meet customers, articulate, well-educated, and knowledgeable buyers. It's beginning to become less and less an opportunity to go out and just move cotton into world markets to people that don't know anything. It used to be you shipped it far away if you had a problem. That doesn't work anymore. You can go to Hong Kong, and they're right on top of the market. In fact, here's a meeting of the 2 remaining spinners in Hong Kong in one of them's warehouse. Yes, they're both together in one place. It's no different than 2 producers meeting out at the hall at this conference and comparing notes. They have to do this kind of thing to stay competitive and stay alive. So, what cotton characteristics does this new customer want? Well, it's not that different than it's always been. I can tell you the most important one that you have absolute control over. Yep, that's right. Most important and critical cotton characteristic is low price. Not much you can do in a gin about that. But let's face it, this is key. Why are our customers out there so cheap? Well, if you want to know why, the next time that you drive up in your car to a big box store, look in the mirror. You're the problem. Consumers have huge amounts of control in all retail markets today, and particularly in apparel. Remember what I said earlier about product development being turned upside down? And that last line about how much someone gets paid for it? It's no longer sufficient to just have low-cost labor or the most modern equipment, or good logistics systems. Your competitor down the road has that. Even in China. Ran across this article about a month ago from the People's Daily that estimated that 2/3 of China's cotton spinning enterprises are losing money. That's what we would consider to be virtually free labor and many, many advantages. They still lose money. And depending upon the kind of yarn product that you're manufacturing, raw cotton represents 50 to 70% of the yarn manufacturing cost. That's why people are so cheap. They have to be in order to stay alive. That's why they will turn to suppliers like India that just pile cotton everywhere, that have only the most modern ginning equipment in their manufacturing, that have some rather odd methods of transportation. By the way, one of the most prevalent contaminants and the most nasty one to get rid of in a textile mill is human hair. You can see how that happens in some of these places. And you may not be able to see him here, but somebody's pet is quite comfortable in this pile of cotton. Yet, Indian cotton, with all of these issues, is frequently the first one that they turn to because it's cheaper. You know, they'll put up with weird packaging and maybe some shady weighing sometimes, even though contaminants are deadly in a mill. You know, why don't they like our cotton? We're all nice and neat, and we don't have, you know, all that stuff I just showed you. Well, the reality is that in some places, like China, it's cheaper to hire labor to pick the contaminants out of the cotton that's delivered if you can get a 4 or 5 cent per pound price break on that fiber. And remember that our cotton doesn't always look so neat and clean when it's delivered. It's not always contaminant-free. You know, things happen along the way during warehousing and shipping that you don't always see those nice clean stacks like I showed you in that warehouse earlier. And sometimes this kind of thing happens that contributes to contamination, or maybe those nice neat bales come undone during shipping. This was a load that I saw being delivered in China. They did not open these bales. They were open when they arrived. We compete internationally against hand-picked cottons that's handled in small groups. Go into a Chinese gin and you'll see kind of the same equipment that you'll see in a gin here, with the exception that you won't see a dryer typically, because this stuff is quite often just laid out beside the road to reach the optimum moisture content for ginning. And you'll see the same kinds of presses. The big issue, the one that does not show up in HVI, that we constantly hear complaints about, are NIPS and short fiber content. NIPS are deadly. In fact, I think I see Dr. Bell here. This slide is stolen without her permission. That shows what happens when you have NIPS in a fabric. It's a disaster from a quality perspective. Also, short fiber content. While length uniformity index on individual bales doesn't tell you short fiber content, taken across millions of bales, it does. When we look at U.S. cotton versus Chinese cotton, and I have some data from past years, U.S. being blue and the Chinese being red, you can see we compete in terms of length reasonably well. We're getting better. We're actually stronger most years, but we lag well behind in length uniformity index, thereby implying very strongly that we have a short fiber content issue. I look at many field trials, and I see short length uniformity index numbers of 83 and 84. I think the last average I saw in this past crop was about 80.6. We don't necessarily have a quality problem, ladies and gentlemen, but I will submit that we have a quality preservation problem, and we've got to address it if we're going to compete in these international markets. Thank you very much for your time and attention.